Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Lynn, and I am your host for Talking Twilight Zone. As always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Bobby Neer, Robert, and Dave Cooper. Hello, guys. I trust you're all doing well.
Hello.
Hello.
Doing fine.
Hello.
We have enough room for one more. If anybody else want to come on, just let you know.
We have enough room for one more. And I want to welcome Rick Wall, a very loyal follower of our show. So, hello, Rick.
Hello.
Before I begin, I want to turn this over to Robert for our opening clip because we are going to be discussing the episode 22.
And now, Mr. Serling.
This is room 22, and on the other side of its doors lies an adventure that is as fascinating as it is inexplicable. It's a story that comes to us from Mr. Bennett Cerf, who describes it as an age-old horror tale whose origin is unknown. We've dressed it up in some hospital wrappings and listed the performance of Miss Barbara Nichols. Next on the Twilight Zone 22, be prepared to be spooked. It's that kind of story.
Thank you, Robert. I appreciate that. Okay, this story is about a dancer and a stripper named Liz Powell, who's spending a few weeks in the hospital because of overwork and just general fatigue. The problem is that she has the same exact nightmare every single night with absolutely no variations. In the nightmare, she wakes up, breaks a glass of water on the floor, hears footsteps outside in the hall, and then follows someone down the hall to the elevator. She gets into the elevator, gets off in the basement, and she walks up to the morgue, which is room 22. The door opens, and a nurse with a crazy sort of smile on her face greets her by saying, "Room for one more, honey." Liz screams and runs back to the elevator, and this goes on every night. Every single night, she goes through the same nightmare. So her goofy agent, Barney, visits her, and, you know, he tries to comfort her in his own sleazy, self-involved sort of way. And her doctor, he suggests that she tries to bury her routine in her dream, you know, do something different when she, has this dream, just not break the glass, you know. But when she tries to do this, the outcome's still the same. Liz finally checks out of the hospital and is about to board a flight to Miami at the airport. And what do you think the flight number was? That's right. Flight 22. She's heading up to the door of the plane when a stewardess steps out, and it's the same woman from her dream. She says, with that crazy smile, "Room for one more, honey," and Liz runs back into the airport screaming. She then watches at the window as the plane takes off, explodes, and bursts into flames in midair. Well, this episode, first off, this episode brings back memories. It sure brings back memories for me because seeing Liz laying there smoking a cigarette in her hospital room reminded me of a time back in 1982 when I visited a coworker in the hospital and she was permitted to smoke cigarettes in her room. That was way back, you know, going back 30 years ago, you were able to smoke in a hospital room. And 1 year prior to that, I took a United Airlines flight from Philly to San Francisco, and people were permitted to smoke on the flight. Now, I'm not a smoker, but I remember when non-smokers were the minority and smokers were the majority, and they were basically accepted or had to accept smoking in public areas. You know, so things have certainly changed since then because it's very strange. I mean, you go onto an airplane now, and the ashtray that used to be there for the smokers, it's like sealed shut with metal. It's sealed shut with the steel there, and you no longer get smoke on a flight except for some international flights, and it's very few. But, you know, the smokers were the majority, non-smokers minority. You know, they had to accept it. They just had to deal with it. In any case, that aside, I like this episode. It's chilling and it's creepy, but I always hate the episodes filmed on videotape. They just seem so staged. You know, I just I'm glad that they didn't last very long. It was only 6 episodes like that. And yet I like the goosebumps effect this episode left me with. You know, even though I think Barbara Nichols, like, she's a bit over the top in her performance at times. But, you know, I think she was supposed to play it that way. So, you know, I'm not begrudging her that. I mean, she had to play it that way. Overall, she did a pretty good job. Now, I didn't find the nurse particularly frightening. I mean, saying to Liz, you know, room for one more, honey, in the doorway of the morgue. Well, okay, that was creepy. That was a little bit scary. But the nurse's appearance, even that crazy smile, didn't seem so frightening to me. So I guess the scare factor mainly rested on how intense Barbara Nichols' character could be. And I think she was pretty intense. And Jonathan Harris, who, as many people know, went on to his most memorable role as Dr. Smith in the TV series Lost in Space, he was perfect as a skeptical doctor. I mean, he had just the right amount of coldness mixed in with a tiny bit of compassion. And, you know, it made you question his bedside manner, but he was good for that role. And her agent Barney, played by Fred Wayne, you know, he was a joke. The guy was a joke, but I suppose he was the comic relief that the story needed. And Robert, in your review, you said that any character basically could have played the doctor's character.
The doctor, yeah. I felt that, yeah. Jonathan was a waste in this one because the way that the role was set up, I mean, you could pick anybody from past or future Twilight Zones and just stick them in that role.
Sure, but it had to be somebody that had like a little bit of sinister, but yet a little.
Well, even John Pussett, you could stick in that role too, and you know.
Yeah. How about the guy who played Henry Bemis's boss, Vaughn Taylor?
Well, there should have been a creepier. They should put a creepier actor in that role as the doctor, as the psychiatrist, which is basically what he was. Is he was the hospital psychiatrist?
Yeah.
In the episode, so. Yeah, that's the only thing. I thought he was wasted in this role, to be honest
about it.
And in a future role coming up, I think he did a little bit better in The Silent.
He had more of a role in that one. Yeah, I think he was shown twice in the episode or something. But, yeah, it was basically just to tell her that, you know, oh, you're going to be fine, you know, and just change your routine. But, yeah, he was wasted in this. But if you put another actor in it, I agree with you. Somebody else could have played that role, but I think it should have been – it has to be somebody who can look a little bit like, you know, not the greatest bedside manner, has a slight bit of compassion. He did that pretty well, but he was wasted in this. They could have done a little bit – well, they could have done it with anyone, really. But, you know, with that said, I am going to give this a 3 for good. I will say it's a – it's a good episode. I'll rate it 3. Nothing more than that. You know, it has its flaws. And you know, other than Jonathan Harris and the fact that I didn't see that the nurse was all that frightening, it's a good enough episode. So I'm going to turn it over to you.
To me?
To,
right?
No, to Robert. To Robert.
Oh, I thought it was coming to me. I'm sorry. Excuse me.
Are you next?
I'm not usually.
No, usually Robert is, but if you are, then go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Mommy, because I have clips, so you know how all my clips are.
Oh, yeah, you go. I'm sorry.
Well, let Robert go. That's okay.
Okay. Okay, I don't know what I'm doing. What is, come on, you guys think I know what I'm doing?
This is like, one what's on first? Who's on second? I don't know who's on third.
I don't care. Left field.
I don't have a clue what I'm doing. Okay, Bobby, you got
it. Maybe third base, but doesn't
matter. I'm in the Twilight Zone, remember?
Anyway,
room for one more, honey. That's all I can say.
People don't think that their doctor was creepy enough. I thought she had more to worry about from him than she did from the nurse. If you're in a hospital room and your doctor is acting like that, you got a lot to worry about. So actually, I think he was more than creepy, to be honest with you. Anyway, it's good casting because Barbara Nichols really did start out life as a stripper. She was a real stripper before she got into acting. I don't think much of her acting ability, although she forged her career out of being kind of blonde bimbos like that. There's nothing new. No real stretch for her.
Was she really a stripper?
Yeah, she started out. She was a stripper, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh. Yeah, she was a stripper, and she became an actress. She didn't do a whole lot in her career, but she died very young. She was only in her 40s when she died of liver disease. And so it was good casting. She certainly knew what she was doing. It is a creepy episode, and it is one of the better ones, but I've always been very uneasy about it because it's not fully realized. It's badly undercut by this videotape or whatever that crap is they're using to film it. And,
but this looks a little bit better, Bobby, than the other ones so far.
Well, I agree.
They're not linked into the hours, and then we're terrible.
I know. But, you know, the funny part about it is that stories that involve the outside, especially, as this one does at the very end, don't do well when they're not on film. Please take note that when you go to a movie to see a feature film, they're still using film. They're not on videotape, which tells you a lot. I mean, given the technology today, how come you don't go to a theater and see everything on videotape? Because it just doesn't look right. That's why. It looks like a stage play. And that's what this – every time they do that on those few episodes that they did it, it looks like you're watching a stage play. It just doesn't look real. And that really, I think, really hurts this episode. It especially hurts the episode at the end, but I'll get that to that in a minute. But the thing about it is that there is a creepiness factor about it, although I don't think it's hard to figure out what's going to happen. You don't know exactly what's going to happen, of course, but clearly she's having some sort of life-threatening premonition about something terrible that's going to take place. I don't want to take anything away from what Robert's going to say, but he posted his review on the board at the group earlier this morning, and I agree with what he had to say, which was that, to tell you the truth, the middle of it is pretty boring. It's pretty tedious to have this business with the psychiatrist talking to her over and over and over again, and it doesn't appear that anything's going to happen, and that's because it's not a fully realized story. It's not really a story. It's more an incident. It's not, you don't know a whole lot about the characters or anything, and so you don't get a whole lot out of it. So it can be a pretty tedious going. Like Robert, I started to think to myself, is this going anywhere? When is it going to finally develop into something? How many times do we have to watch her go down to the morgue, and how many times do we have to watch the doctor come in and tell her that there's really nothing going on and it's all just a bad dream?
Or the doctor, the boyfriend trying to hit on her, too.
Yeah, that's true. And so it's not.
Yeah,
It has its good points, but it really, really, the ending is just appalling. I mean, it amazes me that a network like CBS that has a top-rated series on their hands would start to nitpick over how expensive it is. It is absolutely ridiculous. In today's world of TV, they couldn't care less how expensive anything is. They spend millions and millions of dollars on TV shows. If you're in first place or you're in the top 10, you can do whatever you damn well please, and nobody will stop you. And here, that's all you read on the internet is, well, yeah, CBS gave Sterling a hard time, so it cost too much money. We got to do this. We got to do that. And it shows at the end with the absolutely appalling special effect of the plane blowing up, which is one of the worst things I've ever seen anywhere. I mean, that is a joke. She goes in there to this airport that doesn't look anything like an airport, and she runs outside. She runs back in there, and the plane, you can barely in the background, it's pitch black outside, which would be ridiculous at an airport, and you can barely see something that looks like a plane taking off in the background, and then it looks like a bunch of stagehands stood there and lit some firecrackers or something, and that's supposed to be the plane blowing up. I mean, that is absolutely embarrassing. That's even though I was a kid when I saw it, I thought to myself, that's not a plane blowing up. What is that anyway?
So it's not Casablanca, Bobby.
No, yeah. Well, yeah, I know, but I think they would have done better, to tell you the truth. Since my feeling is, if you don't have the money to do the right kind of special effects, don't do them at all. Don't do them halfway, because that's even worse. What I would have preferred to see is for her to run out there and run back in, and we would watch her reaction through the outside of the window and hear people screaming, and we still would have known the plane blew up. But to go ahead and try to show it in the background when you really have anything to do is ridiculous. I mean, it becomes almost laughable at that point. So I think that really kind of undercuts the story. It's a good story, but, you know, compare this story. Here's a good example. Compare a story like this to early in the series was Time Enough at Last. Even though in Time Enough at Last you could see Peyton's backdrops and all of that, it still was a fairly convincing attempt to show the world being destroyed. And I thought it played out very well, given the time that the story was done on TV. A lot different than this, and that's unfortunate, because I think it takes away from the story. But the story isn't bad. It's nothing really particularly new about it. People in real life do have premonitions, and sometimes they come true. It is very, very, very creepy. I would agree with Lynn about the nurse at the morgue. She's not particularly scary. She's creepy looking because I think she's got too much makeup on. other than that, she looks kind of weird in that respect. I don't know that she's anything really to be afraid of. But it's an interesting. I gave it a 3. I kind of waver a little bit. Robert gave it a 2.5. And I think between a 2.5 and a 3 is probably pretty good. My only regret about it is that I wish it had been done more professionally.
On film.
Fleshed out better, because it deserves it. The idea is better, even though it's not an original idea from Rod Serling. The idea is better than the execution of it. It just looks a little too cheap. And fully, I know we got, I guess, a couple more of these so-called videotape stories, but they are just awful. They really are awful. I mean, it just doesn't.
It looks like a soap opera. It looks like a soap opera.
Well, yes, of course. I've seen a lot of Broadway shows and plays in my time, and I feel like I'm sitting in a theater, and they're trying to recreate this on the stage. Well, you know, when you go to see a live show, you give them a pass on that because there's just so much you can do, and you get very impressed. You go, boy, you really convinced me on that.
Back in the 70s and 80s when you watched you watch soap operas on television, that's the exact look that they had, because that's what they were videotaped, and they all looked like that.
Right. So of all the episodes to pick to do the cutback, as far as money's concerned, this was one they shouldn't have done, because they knew they had to have a woman at the airport, and they were going to do a plane crash. Are you kidding me? That I would have looked at that and said, well, we may do that, but we're not going to do it with this one, because we've got to convince the audience that she really saw the plane crash. And it's simply not convincing in any way. I've watched it over and over and over again because I'm convinced that if you look far enough into that darkness there, when she's looking outside, that there's a couple of stagehands out there lighting firecrackers or something is what they're doing.
Or break some windows or something from the force of the blast would have helped it a little bit.
Yeah.
I hate to seem so mean-spirited, but I think it would have been a better story if at the end she'd actually gotten on the plane and died in it. Because then Sterling could have come on and said, well, some premonitions come true no matter what you do. And I know that sounds terrible, but I think it might have been a better story. I'll give it a 3. It's a fairly decent story. It's better, and I'd like to see it. To tell you the truth, although I never say this, I'd like to see somebody remake the story today with today's special effects. I think it would be a lot more compelling than it was.
And she should have been in bed in her hospital gown, not a slinky silk nightgown.
Oh, no, that was the best bit.
Oh, yeah, well, you're like,
of course you say that, Davey.
And there's a slinky nightgown there and a slinky negligee.
Well, that was a very...
That's realistic, right?
And you hear the music going...
That performance needed a special mention.
It's a very strange-looking
Yes. Yes.
Just put any music in there.
It's not a very convincing hospital she's in either. As a person who was once in the hospital for more than a month, you can't just get up in the middle. I know she's dreaming, but it's a strange place. Sometimes there are people walking around. Sometimes there aren't. And it's just kind of bizarre looking. But I'll give it a 3. It's one of the better episodes. All right. This goes to what, Robert?
Yeah, the next pervert. Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Well, I'm glad to be back.
Slinky nightgowns, okay.
I just wanted to say that I kind of agree with you, Lena, about the smoking situation, because evidently the psych ward in the hospital must not have oxygen tanks on that floor. So I guess that's probably why they were allowed to smoke. Because
no, they had oxygen tanks back then. They just didn't care.
Oh, they didn't have them on that floor?
well, I don't know on that floor, but there was smoking in hospitals, even though they did have oxygen tanks in the 60s. Yes, there was.
Yeah.
Even doctors and stuff did. And Robert, as late as 1969, I was in the hospital when I was 9 years old. People could walk around at night and whatnot. It wasn't as strict or anything like it is today. The corridors were empty and dark, and the only way to get somebody was to press the call button.
The help button. Yeah, the help button.
Yeah, I hope the hospitals weren't like Halloween 2's hospital.
That would have been rough, yeah.
Be careful, Michael Myers. On that
exactly.
One. Well, anyway, I kind of got good thing and bad thing about this episode. The good thing is it was basically an episode of parts that I'd enjoyed. The downside is, as Bobby said, that there were some boring scenes in this episode, and But first, let me tell you about the good parts that I did like about this episode. I did like the dream occurrence of her going through this dream and going downstairs to the morgue and her coming out. I don't know if it needed to be repeated a second time, but, you know, to justify that this is something that she's going through, because I think she's been in the hospital for what? Has it been a couple of
weeks
or something like that?
It's been weeks,
yeah.
According to everything that I've read, it's, she's supposedly in there for weeks due to exhaustion, fatigue, overwork, yeah.
Right. And, I mean, you know, those parts wasn't that bad. And the part when she's leaving the hospital and the ending, I really enjoyed that. But the part with the doctor and her lecherous manager talking to her was what really kind of dragged it down a little bit. I mean, I like a good, creepy, psychological horror story. And in my review, I mentioned Color of Night with Bruce Willis, Dressed to Kill with Michael Caine, or even Body Double with Melanie Griffith.
Right.
You know, Brian De Palma, he does a pretty good job on some of the films that he does. But, you know, that's the connection with the psychiatrist with those films. This is just basically a premonition episode. Been done in films and TV series, you know, for years. I kind of had the same situation I did with Bobby about how I wanted to rate it, if it was a 2.5 or 3, the same situation. But I looked at the poll, too, and, I mean, it never gotten a poor. It never gotten a 0. It never got a 5. And, you know, it seemed to be from 4 to 1 that this episode did, which is not too bad, you know, considering on, you know, how people view it.
I never checked the poll. Somebody gave it a 1?
I think. Oh, no. I meant a 2 to 5. 2 to 4,
oh,
excuse
okay.
me.
Oh, okay.
2 to 4.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
2 to 4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There wasn't no 0s. There wasn't no 1, and there wasn't no, or
yeah,
what's
there
the
was
next
an
one?
Excellent.
Perfection,
yeah, was,
or whatever the fifth
excellent.
One is. Yeah.
There was an excellent. Yeah.
There
were
a couple of them, yeah.
Kelly gave it an excellent. But,
and somebody else did.
Yeah, basically it was anywhere from average to good. That was the consensus mostly, yeah.
But I think if this was filmed on film instead of on video, that it may have done a lot better. I mean, you know, the creep factor was with this one. Like I said, it's a part episode for me. The first half wasn't that crazy, except for the scenes of her going through her nightmare and then going into when she leaves and aborting the plane. And I did like those parts. Maybe, as Bobby says, this is an episode that wasn't fully realized. Here again, we talk about the fourth season, about the hour episodes. Maybe, I don't know if this would have done better in an hour slot or not. But, you know, you got to remember, there's a certain budget that they have to work with. So, you know, you can't do the stuff like they did for the movie Airport or the other ones where, you know, they are able to do that. But let me ask you this, Bobby, before I go on. What do you think they should have done special effect-wise to improve that ending for you?
Well, it's like
with
I
what
said,
they had
I don't
to work
they
with.
Have done, I don't think they should have done it at all. Because you either do it right or you don't do it. You don't have to do it. You don't have to show, look, they're standing there and they say to themselves, what are we going to do? We're running out of money. We can't do a big show here as a special effects. There are other ways to create terror, and I would have preferred when she runs back into the terminal, we see inside the window that way. Once she gets in there, then we see they switch the view to outside. That, I think, is a mistake. Mm-hmm. We should have been looking from the outside in and seen her standing at the window along with other people and maybe seen a flash in the background behind us, sort of.
Yeah.
As a way of saying,
of that,
oh, my God,
yeah.
The plane blew up. You don't want to show it unless you can actually show something. I don't care whether you show stock footage of a plane blowing up or what, but you've got to do something or just don't do it. Just do it right or don't do it. It wasn't really that.
So
it's like
don't
they
show the plane.
Ways.
Just have
they
her back against
ways.
The window as
yeah,
it exploded.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
That's
see
what
the
I
image
was
in the way. Right, exactly. That way you wouldn't have noticed so much that it looks like, you know, people are holding up lit newspapers or something to make it look like there's a fire.
That's
it's a little. It's a
yeah.
little. Don't you think? Don't you think they did a much better job in Time Enough of Leia showing a devastated world, especially
oh,
when he was standing at the library with all the books all over the place.
Fabulous.
Yeah, sure. That's why that episode stands out so much about the others. So that's why.
Greatest episode ever. No,
yeah,
but
I wonder how many dump trucks they had to bring into that sound stage to fill that up.
They went ahead and did it. Yeah, well, they did it. So, you know, that's why he got in trouble, because he was spending so much money.
I thought you should be standing at the window and in the reflection of the window see the flash.
Right.
And that's what I wanted. I thought would have been best. Yeah,
right.
No, Tom, that's the last one. That was perfect.
It's as though they were saying, well, watch this. We're going to show a plane blowing up. Oh, sorry, we don't have the money. Oh, well, it could have been better, but that's all right. It's one of those things. Do it right or don't do it. You know, there's other ways.
And just to confirm what Bobby brought up about Jonathan Harris, I like him as an actor. I always have, and he's great in Lost in Space. And I don't know why they couldn't stick him in something more meatier in the Twilight Zone, why, you know, he's, you know, put in this position in this episode. And, you know, people could say paycheck. Maybe that's the word for that, but... You know, still, he was okay as a doctor.
I would have been more afraid of him than I was as a nurse. He's a lot scarier.
But
he's a psychiatrist. He could have her put away.
Yeah, yeah.
True, yeah.
He could have made him a little more evil, snide, maybe had more of a snide, you know, curl on his lip or something like that. Who knows? I think he tried it, but it just didn't work. If you really watch him as he kind of, you know, make his eye stand out. And
well,
kinda,
maybe Elvis,
but,
Elvis Presley could have played that role. I mean, he had that nice little curl in his lip.
Hey, baby, I'm the doctor.
Maybe the censors of the day, limited what they could do in that respect.
That's true.
Yep.
Yeah,
I agree with that. Well, I got some clips today, and the first one, most of these clips deal with premonition. And the first one is a clip from Doctor Who called The Deadly Assassin, where the Fourth Doctor, played by Tom Baker, gets a premonition of the president on his world of Gallifrey being assassinated. And I'll go and play that clip here.
Through the millennia, the Time Lords of Gallifrey led a life of peace and ordered calm, protected against all threats from lesser civilizations by their great power. But this was to change. Suddenly and terribly, the Time Lords faced the most dangerous crisis in their long history.
What's that? The APC control.
APC?
Amplified Paratropic Computations.
Brain cells.
Trillions of electrochemical cells in a continuous matrix. And the cells are the repository of departed Time Lords. At the moment of death, an electrical scan is made of the brain pattern, and these billions of impulses are immediately transferred to the...
I understand the theory. What's the function?
Well, to monitor life in the capital. We use all this combined knowledge and experience to predict future developments.
Like the assassination of a president.
For some reason, that was not foreseen.
Oh, yes, it was foreseen, Egan. It was foreseen by me. How very clever. This time he surpassed himself.
What are you talking about?
Don't you see what he's done? We Time Lords are telepathic. That's simply a brain storage system. He intercepted its forecast that the president was to be assassinated and beamed it into my mind.
Is that possible?
Really? Yes, yes. He could do it. You said my DE had been scanned.
Yes.
Yes. He'd need a biography print to beam a message accurately over that distance.
And that one is a pretty good one. I believe it is 6 episodes, that story. Is that, Dave?
I'll take your word for it off the top of my head.
Okay. But it is kind of a good one, because we learn more about his people on his planet, and also about the Master in that one. So that one's kind of a premonition about something being beamed to somebody's head of a future event that don't happen yet until he arrived there. So I was thinking about that one. That was 1976. My other one is from 1992. It's from Star Trek Next Generation. And the episode is Cause and Effect. And it's basically the Enterprise is stuck in a Casalis loop where everything seems normal to them, and then something happens with the ship explodes, and it starts back at the beginning. Pretty much what happened with this episode with Liz and her dream. So go ahead and play that one next.
Caught in an endless time loop.
We could have been trapped here for hours, days, maybe years.
Unable to remember the past.
How did it happen? How did we get there?
A starship collision lies dead ahead.
We have to get out of here now.
Can the crew escape their own destiny?
casualty reports coming in from all over the ship.
Or will time tick towards their final hour?
All hands abandon ship!
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Damage report!
Casualty reports coming in from all over the ship.
The starboard nacelle has sustained a direct impact. We are venting drive plasma.
Initiating emergency core shutdown.
Inertial damper is failing. We're losing attitude control.
This is the bridge. All hands to emergency escape pod.
Core shutdown is unsuccessful. We are losing antimatter containment.
We've got to eject the core.
Ejection systems offline. Core breach is imminent.
All hands to abandon ship. Repeat. All hands to abandon.
And then it would start up all over again. But Dr. Crusher had kind of, you would call, a recognizance or a premonition of what was going to happen, because each time the Enterprise exploded, it left an echo or was able to pick pieces up, like she would water the plant and knock over a glass.
Actually, it was Worf first,
and then it was Crusher? Okay.
And then Geordi suggested that they put in some kind of, like, tell that they know that
right.
They're reliving it.
And then Data picked up on it.
They left a message for Data, didn't they?
Right.
A number.
Right.
So pretty much like the number 22 in this one, it was the number 3 in this episode, in the cause and effect episode.
Oh.
One movie decided to use the ending in their movie, and it was Final Destination. It came out in 2000, and I think they meant this as a homage to The Twilight Zone, because the ending of this episode is basically the beginning of Final Destination. And here is the trailer for that.
I got this feeling. It's weird, Sam.
The cabin starts to shake, right? And the left side blows up, and then the whole plane just explodes.
The plane can explode! It's not a joke! It's not a joke!
We get thrown off the plane, all because Browning has a bad dream?
I saw it.
The plane! It's gonna blow up! It's gonna blow up!
All 287 passengers are feared dead.
Because of you, I'm still alive.
In death, there are no accidents. No coincidences. And no escapes.
Did this happen again? Did you see Todd die?
And in that one, death is the killer of the movie, but you don't see death. But death feels like it's been cheated from the victims that were not on that plane. So that's what the whole movie is about, where death goes through and tries to eliminate the ones that wasn't on the plane. So that guy had a premonition, very much like I said, the ending of The Twilight Zone they used for the beginning of that film. And then finally, came out in 2007, The Number 23, which starred Jim Carrey. And I'll play that one.
Wasn't buying that for you, too.
Actually, I've had a good long time to flip through it. Why don't you give it a try?
The Number 23. A heart-wrenching odyssey into paranoia. One of the most horrifying metamorphoses ever told.
I'm buying this for you.
Chapter 1. All I could think about was the number. I met you when I was...
23.
And the day we met was?
September 14th.
9/14. 14 plus 9 is?
23. Is it all just a coincidence?
I don't know. So what is 23?
There are 23 axioms to Euclid's geometry. The human body consists of 46 chromosomes, 23 from each parent. 2 divided by 3, 0.666, number of the devil.
So is 23 a blessing or a curse?
I was born at 11:12 p.m. 11 plus 12.
23.
My birthday, 23.
Driver's license, social security number,
all 23. It's intense.
You've concerned yourself with minutiae, and you've drawn wild conclusions from them.
Every 23rd word on every 23rd page.
I warn you, hell is waiting.
And in that movie, Jim Carrey, which one of his serious roles, I mean, he's a great actor, and we've seen him in comedy, but he can also do some drama as well. And in this one, he plays a person that goes over the edge because of constantly finding this number 23 wherever he looked and turned around. So kind of a psychological horror with that movie. But that's my examples to tie into today's episode, 2.5 out of 5. So, Dave, are you the next one to pass it to?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, right, yeah, okay. Well, I quite enjoyed it. I must be, I mean, the young lady how do you say it, Lynn?
Sashaying?
Sashaying down the street.
Sashaying down the hallway.
Yeah. Got my attention.
I'm sure it did.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, basically, it looked as though they had no budget at all. Unless, of course, the budget actually went on the cast, although there wasn't a very large cast. And I honestly don't know how far into their levels of fame that these particular actors were at the time. Obviously, as we've mentioned, Jonathan Harris is much better well known from Lost in Space and so on. I don't know whether he was just a jobbing actor at this kind at this time, the same way as the Barbara Nichols actress who was presumably, you know, what we would now call a celebrity B class, you know, Jane Mansfield, Marilyn Monroe, Diana Dawes type of person. But maybe that's where the budget did indeed go.
Or Mimi Van Horen, for one. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, there were two. I'm going to be getting into trouble for this. There were two things I couldn't keep my eyes off. And that was. That was Freddie Wayne's glasses. The Benny's glasses. I couldn't believe those glasses he was wearing. Yes, that's what I was watching. You all have
the
rotten
Coke
minds.
The Coke bottle glasses.
Unbelievable.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And they stuck up. I couldn't believe it. I was thinking, on earth are those glasses? I think actually picking Jonathan Harris was actually quite good, because I think the whole misdirection was that you were supposed to believe something sinister was going on in the hospital, you know, where, you know, people are going to be used for spare parts or something. And the whole thing was that this is a bad, bad omen, which in many ways it was, but it was actually a premonition that was going to actually, in the end, save this lady's life. And I don't know about you, but I mean, I must be a bit of a sucker, because no sooner than we're at the airport and she finds a flight 22, I'm saying to the TV screen, don't get on the plane. And everybody who's watching it saying, don't get on the plane. I mean, I don't think many people who had that sort of premonition would have even walked up the flight of stairs and then seen the sucker punch of the mysterious woman on the stairs. I think they would have cancelled a reservation at the first sign. One slight piece of trivia, 22 actually is my favourite number, my lucky number. So perhaps I would have taken it as a good warning. And what is it, if there's any coincidence with this episode, the actress who, Arlene Martel, I think it is, who played that, the nurse downstairs and the air stewardess, and the one who played Barney, Freddie Wayne, both again have appeared in Bewitched. I think the last 6 episodes we've done here on this show, at least one of them has appeared in Bewitched. Now, maybe that's because Bewitched was a very long-running TV shows that had lots of guest appearances, but they all seem to come back to that. This woman, again, I noticed, let me get the right woman again now, the actress woman, the stripper, or whatever you want to call her, Barbara Nichols, she did have some success. She was in The Sweet Smell of Success with Tony Curtis and Burt Lancaster, so she must have.
Oh, really?
I'm not saying she was the major lead female role, but she actually was in that. Very sad that she died at 46 or 7, like Bobby said. It says from the liver, so whether that means they're trying to suggest that she had a drinking problem, I don't know. But I quite liked her. She reminded me of that woman out of Singing in the Rain. I can't stand it. You know, the one out Singing in the Rain. I thought she was very watchable indeed. Yes, I'm sure you did. I do agree again with this this videotape business. I mean, I didn't used to watch it a lot, but what was the big? Forgot the name. With the one with who shot JR in it?
Dallas.
Yeah. That went downhill when they went from film to videotape as a cost saving one, didn't it? It just didn't look. It's supposed to be a lavish lifestyle, and it just lost it when they did that.
It's like watching a soap opera. All the soap operas are filmed like that in the early 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s, even as far back as the 50s. They were all filmed on videotape, and they all looked with that yellowish tint to them. It was awful.
Still are.
Awful.
Robert mentioned that, he played a clip of a Doctor Who thing. I mean, one of the things I thought in common was, isn't it amazing how when you're watching that, how slow the delivery is of the lines? You don't know whether it's because they want everybody to catch every word or whether they've got 4 pages of script that have got the last 20 minutes. But the delivery of some of the lines seemed rather slow and laborious. But I quite enjoyed it. I'd certainly give it, 2.5 to 3. And it was very similar. And if this was done later, I mean, there was a TV series I think I've mentioned before in the UK that was done in the late 70s, early 80s called Tales of the Unexpected. They were written by Roald Dahl. I could see this as being an exact sort of type of one that they would have. Maybe they did parody it in one of their stories, I don't know. But anybody who is listening to this show and is enjoying The Twilight Zone and that's their kind of TV, if you can hunt out Tales of the Unexpected, I think you'll see a lot of parallels there. But not really a lot to say other than I watched it, I enjoyed it, and it got a jiggle rating of 3.
So you give it a 3, and I give it a 3, and Bobby gives it a 3, and Robert gives it 2.5 to 3. Now it's up to Rick.
Oh, gee, thanks. Well,
you got it, babe.
let me say this about videotape. It's gotten a lot better. Don't forget this is in, the pioneering days of it. So... yeah, you're going to have some problems. I'm not saying, I'm not defending it. I'm just saying, and by the way, about 80% of the movies you see now are neither on tape nor film. They are on a little computer chip. I personally see the difference, but that's because I'm in the business. But there is quite a bit of difference. About the episode, I liked it. Although for some reason now, even though it's my show, some people can say it's boring and nothing happens. I find it kind of annoying because it's nothing really happens till the end.
Right.
I agree. Yeah, it's true.
But it's all right. I agree with everybody. Jonathan Stewart, I liked him in this episode. I like
Jonathan Harris.
Harris. Yes, I'm sorry.
Maybe John Stewart would have been better, yeah. I'll take either one.
Ronnie Cox, no.
Don't Ronnie say Cox. Ronnie Cox.
Don't start that again. Mr. Peepers.
Okay, we started again. Oh my God.
Anyway, Sorry about that. Anyway, concentrate. But to tell you the truth, I liked his acting better in here than I did in a lot of Lost in Space when he did Dr. Smith. Also, another thing, back then, even now today, the network exec says, we got to save money. You do it, or you're not on the network anymore.
Yeah, I guess you can't really argue that. I mean, it's
no
one way or the other. Yeah.
But Rick, couldn't they like some kind of test instead of taking 6 episodes and putting it in that format? I mean, they couldn't run a test run on at least an episode and then took a look at it and see what they thought.
They could have, but they didn't want to. And don't forget, back then TV was something still relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the 60s.
They probably thought they wouldn't notice it on the screens since, that time.
Yeah. I mean, even in the 60s, I think only a third of the United States had TVs.
Yeah, but even if people really liked an episode and it did well, if it was going to cost too much money, they didn't want to do it, the networks wouldn't put out the money to do it?
Nope.
Wow.
Absolutely not. Nope.
That's a shame.
They were even cheaper back then than they are now.
We probably lost a lot of good shows because of that.
Well, let's put it this way. Digress a little bit. You guys know anything about the new, I know Dave does, the new Wonder Woman?
No.
Okay, they shot a pilot for a new series of Wonder Woman. To make a long story short, another host was taken aback that the network turned it down. Okay? There are at least 500 to 1,000 pilots shot that you never see on TV. Why? Because the networks don't pick them up.
Well, some end up as TV movies, of course, failed pilots. But to answer that question about cost saving, I mean, that's one of the things that Robert and I are so annoyed about, because the Doctor Who was done on videotape, and they were so stingy then that the videotape cost something like, in today's money, £5,000 a tape. So they would wipe the show off and reuse them for next week's show.
And the props were really chintzy, too. Props were bad.
Well, also, too, they would mix in Doctor Who. And, Dave, I think you could agree that they did mix videotape and film, which you can notice the difference, because they use film on location shots. They use video in the studio, and you can really tell the difference.
Those are the surviving parts now, of course, in many cases.
But don't you guys agree that the props were pretty bad? I mean, they were like a little chintzy.
Yeah,
I'll give
on
the
Merkin. The
Merkin was terrible.
It was basically, it looked like the plane crash. It basically looked like a 1-foot model being pulled along on a string with a firecracker at the back of it.
Bubble wrap.
Yes, and I will agree. Like, I do not know Doctor Who anywhere near the way you guys do. I have watched episodes, and my brother is a big Doctor Who fan. But so that's the only reason I have been able to watch some of them. And the props were bad. The props were really shitty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the production now is 100 times better than it was, going back to 63 to 89. Sometimes you would have kind of a villain in the plastic suit but a lot of times you had to set that aside for the story itself, because sometimes the story was pretty good.
Right.
And thereby you can kind of set aside the rubber monster But there's other times if you come across a Doctor Who story that's really bad and you have a rubber villain, then it made it kind of worse. Or, for example, there's one from Sylvester McCoy, plays Seventh Doctor, a story called Paradise Towers, where really nothing but stupid things happen in that one. And unless you like to have somebody scream in the entire story there, Mel. But, yeah, it's like any program to, Doctor Who wasn't the only one. I mean, Outer Limits,
too. By a long shot, no. Definitely not the only one. I mean, there were a lot of them. And, I mean, this episode alone, I mean, it just shows that, they were trying to save money, and I understand that. I understand that they were trying to, cut the budget and do things, but the thing is, you're talking about a hit television show. You're in your second season. Let's go for the third season. So let's do the best we can. If it made it through one to go to two, let's go through two to go to three because, if people like it and they're happy with what we've done, do what the hell you have to do.
Well, that's exactly what they did do. Perhaps it's only because they made that cost-cutting that they got taken up for the further series. It may have ended if they hadn't have done it.
So you think they needed to do that for the second season?
Should they only save $30,000 in six episodes? That's why they dropped it. They didn't save really that much money. But like I said, look at today's series that are out on TV now.
Back then, that was a lot of money, though.
That's right.
Well,
yeah,
true.
I agree.
I mean, okay, today that would be the craft service budget, but back then it was a lot of money. Okay?
Oh yeah, back in 1961, sure.
I mean, even in the 60s, I mean, you could go into a bar, buy a steak, a beer. A dessert and soup, and it would cost you, what, $3?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me ask you something. If you get to the third season of a TV series, and it's high in the ratings, and everybody loves it, and everyone's happy, and you think it's going to go to the fourth season, then do you stop cutting corners, or do you keep cutting corners? You're now in your third season.
Depends on what the network execs say.
Yeah.
Okay, and me as a producer, I have I have say in the matter, but not much. Again, like I said, even more so back then, today still though too, the network executive is God.
Yeah. And the advertisers as well, and more so. I mean, let's look at it this way. You had MASH, you had, Gunsmoke, you had these other ones that lasted for years, 20 years. What do you have today that really lasts that long? Maybe Law & Order, it finished after 20 years. Smallville finished after 10. Right now, the longest run is, I think, Supernatural and Fringe. Fringe is going into its... Is it third season or fourth season, something like that?
However, I would like to just mention one thing. When those shows were going into their 9th, 10th, 11th seasons, remember back then we didn't have the multitude of channels that we have right now. I mean, back when MASH was on, MASH went 11 seasons.
All in the Family, yeah.
All in the Family. But we didn't have the cable channels that we have now. People were watching television. They were watching,
CBS, NBC,
ABC, ABC, right, and PBS. That was it. So it wasn't like they were up against a lot of cable channels. Now you have
Fox and CW.
Exactly. You've got them up against about 20 different other channels and cable channels. And, MASH, the final episode of MASH, I agree, that was phenomenal. That was one of the best season finales of all time. But it wasn't up. I was in high school. I was in high school when the finale of MASH aired. And that was, that was it. I mean, you watched channel ABC, CBS, NBC, or PBS. You didn't have all these cable channels up against you. So, of course, it was the highest rated at that time. You know, and that's my only argument against that. You know, you can't really judge today by what happened back then. All in the Family,
yeah.
All of them, you know.
But
you
a lot of shows aren't getting
against
the chance today like they used
right.
to, though,
because
unfortunately.
Too much else up against them.
Right,
back
but they're making the second
then,
or third episode, it's cut. So.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've watched television shows, a series that by the third episode, I was like, oh, this is a great show. By the fifth episode, it's gone. It's gone. And I like this one. No, there was too much up against it. So if that's the problem, then, you know, back then, back in 1975, 1985, you had a chance. You don't have a snowball's chance in hell now. You better be as good as you can be or you're screwed.
Not really. Starting more or less in the 80s, they started worrying about ratings.
In the 80s, yeah. The 80s.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, like Star Trek got two goes at making a pilot, didn't they? And even,
yeah.
I think, Buffy later on in the 80s got a chance. So
yeah.
There are exceptions.
Yeah.
But back in the 60s, I don't even think Nielsen ratings were in existence then. I think that was more like
the
70s.
Nielsen's, I think the Nielsen's, Rick, didn't the Nielsen rate come into effect in the 70s?
Yeah.
Mid
to late 70s.
Like 75 or something? Yeah, that
something
was
like
the Nielsen rate. So nobody knew who was watching what, but nobody cared because in the 50s, 60s, and early 70s, it was, you know, your three channels, your public broadcasting channel, and that was it.
And the local stations.
And the local stations. So nobody was really fighting that hard. I mean, you know.
But you had more people staying home during that
That's
time.
Right.
Not today.
That's right. People didn't go out as much. You had then, and
right.
women were not going out to work. Women were staying at home being homemakers. You know, the men were coming home from
family
work.
Family time. Yeah.
You ate your dinner with the kids and you watched television at night. So you had your nightly television shows that you watched. I remember as a kid, every Sunday we watched Lawrence Welk. You know, I mean, we had to watch that. My grandmother wanted to watch it. So, I mean, you had a certain criteria, but it's not like.
Or Barnaby Jones, Maddox, the NBC
exactly.
mystery movies.
Yeah,
on Sunday. World of Disney. Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't have you weren't up against the stuff that you are now. And you just turned on the television, you had, you know, they didn't have to fight. It was, it's one of these three shows. And that's why these shows lasted so long. The Beverly Hillbillies, Green Acres, all these shows lasted for seasons. They would never last this long now because... Well, some might. I shouldn't say they wouldn't. Some might, but some wouldn't. They didn't have the competition. It's competition. They didn't have it back then.
Yep. Ready to wrap, or anybody else got anything?
Gave my rating.
Go ahead, Rick. What's your rating?
I agree with everybody. It's 3.
Three. We got a 3. Okay, we've got a consensus of 3 on this one. All right, well, that means that 2 weeks from now, on June 18th, am I right, Robert? June 18th?
Yep, June 18th.
The Odyssey of Flight 33. Oh, yes.
Time travel. Yes, yes.
Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be a very fun one to discuss, and I can't wait. So, we will be back here in 2 weeks. June 18th, Flight 33, and let's make sure that we do not go back into time and we stay where we are and can be here for this episode. So, everybody, have a wonderful rest of the weekend, and I will see you in 2 weeks. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Say bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.